We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold. Cody Tapp back in studio.
I'm back
after a couple days off. What's going on, man?
Moved out of my old place. Put my kid through some virtual school.
Ooh, I got to hear about this.
It was not great. And then
you were handling the virtual schooling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I took a couple of days off of my wife's plate, thinking, well, I'm here and there are things to do, but I'll do this school. For a couple of days, it did not go smoothly. It turns out 4-year-olds who are already a little emotionally challenging don't like going to school on an iPad.
Seems a bit challenging, seems a bit stressful, frustrating, all of the above involved there. I'm sure plenty of parents out there can relate.
It's not the teacher's fault. It's just the kid.
Oh, it's an awful situation for everybody.
Yeah. There's just no easy way to do it. There are 1,000 parents who listen to sports radio who are like, Yeah, I've been dealing with that. And it just spreads out throughout the entire day because you're like, oh, they're supposed to be doing some like online assignments too. You're like, I can't do this right after she just did battle for an hour over, you know, a song that she had to sing about names. We'll do that assignment later. It's fine.
Yeah, something certainly plenty of people can relate to. We will get to more on that and what transpired over the last couple of days for you. Good to have you back in the studio. And we've got a busy show today, as always, and especially coming up when it comes to the Chiefs in the 11 o'clock hour, and hear from Andy Reid live here on 610 Sports Radio, plus Patrick Mahomes, a couple other players expected to speak to the media today as we're in the middle of the week. And before we know it, well, week two begins tomorrow night. And then for the Chiefs, of course, Sunday afternoon out in L.A. against those L.A. Chargers who squeaked by the Cincinnati Bengals. And this game has the makings of a trap game for you,
doesn't it? I mean, when we put together all the ingredients of what we consider a trap game, isn't that this Chargers game? A team who underperforms, so you sleep on, a team who knows you well. The Chargers certainly do that. I'm not saying many teams in the AFC West beat Kansas City, but they're good for a loss every couple of years in the Andy Reid era against a divisional opponent. A team that knows you well, is coming off a bad game, so you underestimate. And is squeezed between two of the more difficult games of your schedule. The Texans, now that did not turn out to be a very difficult game, but going into the year, a game that was supposed to be a challenge due to the fact the Texans have been a perennial, you know, team that wins their division and goes to the postseason. And the biggest game on your schedule, the one team, in my opinion, who stands in your way of holding that top spot in the AFC this year and getting that only by the Ravens, coming up 1 week after that. Yeah, the Chargers make sense to be a trap game. It's one you can't fall asleep on. And if you do, you will find yourself in trouble. It doesn't mean I'm going to predict them to win this week necessarily, but this is a game you absolutely have to monitor for riders. Not to mention the Chargers also do something good that you're bad at. They run the ball well, and the Chiefs have what? Multiple seasons worth of evidence to prove they're not very good at stopping the run? Last year they weren't good at stopping the run. Did week one give you confidence? David Johnson ran perfectly fine. So it's like all of those factors to me mean, yeah, don't sleep on the Chargers this week.
I understand where you're coming from to a certain extent, which is, yes, there's a huge opponent on the horizon in week three. We've been talking about that Ravens game the entire offseason from the minute that game was scheduled. We view the Ravens and the Chiefs. Those are the two teams in the AFC that have the best chance to go win a Super Bowl. All that makes sense. And you have this opponent, the Chargers, in the middle where nobody thinks very highly of. Maybe you have them as a wild card team. A lot of people don't. They're certainly not a threat to the Chiefs. And so I guess in that realm, I see where you're coming from. But man, this is 10 days. This is 10 days for Andy Reid. This is essentially a bye week for Andy Reid. That's where I can't buy into where you're coming from
because
on that.
He gets because the extra time.
We know how good he is off of byes. What is it after last year? Now 18-3 Andy Reid off a bye week. This isn't officially a bye, but you
That's
play on
pretty
a Thursday.
Much his record against teams in the division in the Andy Reid era, too.
Yeah, I mean, couple everything together. The bye week 18-3 record. Mahomes is 8-0 in his career in the month of September. Hasn't thrown an interception. You're taking on a Chargers team where clearly you're the better football team. You go out west. I don't see the lack of focus and the trap game.
You don't always lose trap games. There's a reason why they exist inside the schedule, though. And this one, to me, like, if you're going through their entire schedule, I think the other one you would point out is probably the Bills.
Well, that's the short turnaround.
Because there's obvious reasons that benefit that, right?
But the Bills are actually decent. Like, I'm higher on the Chargers than you are.
You thought the Chargers are a playoff team. How can you not tell me
they're... I still think they're a 9-1 game.
Well, then how are they not
decent? But it's not a trap game. They can win 9 games. They can still go 0-2 against the Chiefs. If they steal one against the Chiefs on Sunday, then yeah, I feel really good about my Chargers wild card pick. It's not going to happen, man. It's not going
to
happen.
I thought you were about to call them my Chargers. I was like,
no.
Easy, dial it back.
No.
I know you like them this year, but...
Not happening whatsoever.
Let's not go there.
Joshua Kelly, baby.
Serta's Fantasy Flash coming up. There's your sneak peek for it. That's coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. And Joshua Kelly did look good.
They run the
Eckler.
Ball well.
They do. And I know we're
and the Chiefs
about
don't
Eckler,
stop
but.
The run particularly well. And the only look, the last couple of times to beat the Chiefs, how have the teams who have beaten the Chiefs beaten the Chiefs last year? All their losses, stack them up. How did the teams beat them?
Well, look at the Colts.
The Texans ran all over them. The Colts ran all over them. The Titans ran all like. It was kind of a similar script, which is why we were talking about the AFC Championship game against the Titans. I remember going into the postseason, I told you that was a team that legitimately scared me if they got to the AFC title game, because then they would be doing something they're great at against a team that has never been particularly good. And they'll still have no Mike Pinnell. Colin Saunders can't help there. He's out a month with his dislocated elbow. So they don't have all the pieces in place. It's not, I do think Kansas City will win this game, but I think that this kind of lines up. And if you're not choosing that game as a trap game, because there's a couple of year that you don't play quite as well as you should. Game's a little tighter than it needs to be. This one feels like one of those games that's lining up that way to me.
It's one where if you're just trying to look from where the Vegas odds are at on it, and the Chiefs open as 8.5-point favorites, and I think the initial reaction most people have is, that's not enough points. The Chiefs should blow them out. The Chiefs should win by 2 touchdowns, which is the
especially after they just covered a 10.5-point spread against a better team.
Absolutely. And so sometimes when you have that thought process going in, they're a lot closer games. I'll give you that. Like that's a line I'm staying away from. It seems too good to be true. Overall, especially as the line's going to creep up. But when I look at the Chargers, we know you can say that there's a couple trap games a year, yes. But one, I think there's also some that get limited when you're as good as the Chiefs are, and some that just don't impact you the way you typically would. Like a team that might be, another divisional winner this year. Let's go last year, for example. Like whoever you think wasn't dominant but won their division a year ago. Those teams that, you know, you look at the Texans, for example,
sure.
and those teams, yeah, those teams are way more susceptible to trap games. And I know you're saying that it doesn't mean they're going to lose. They're just going to be ones where you might have to go down to the final possession kind of thing.
But the Chiefs lost to what I consider not good teams last year. How did they lose to the Colts? Like, that wasn't a particularly good team, but they lost to that team.
Yeah, I think that was when Mahomes wasn't fully healthy, though, correct? He was playing in the game, but he had the bum ankle. I mean, Sean McCoy, if the fumbles, there were mistakes. And I know that's the formula in any game.
Sure,
year,
in any trap game, that's the scenario. Like you're saying, mistakes will happen.
But they are fairly healthy. You can bring up Saunders. You can bring up Pinnell, one game suspension. The one still more concerning thing is Charvarius Ward going to play or not? And is Snead going to be your number one corner? As good as Snead looked in his rookie debut, is Snead your number one corner? Is Ward going to be able to play with a club on his hand with the fractured hand? We'll learn that as the week goes on. I imagine he's going to be a game time type of decision.
Making it sound like he's going to try to play.
Yeah, and we'll hear again from Andy Reid coming up around 11:45 or so today on the show and find out if there's any sort of update in that regard.
And that was normal week before they were going to take on the Texans. That was back-to-back losses. So really, the Texans to me is not a trap. That was a division winner. They had already lost the game. You don't tend to get snuck up on twice with a full weeks of rest. They were coming, but I think they might have been looking ahead to the Texans a bit. And not always. He was hurt. Mahomes wasn't right. They were missing Hill. That wasn't a full capacity team. And Ward would be maybe the only hindrance of the they're not at full capacity. They're definitively better than the Chargers. It's going to be hard to ever predict that a team like that would beat Kansas City. The Chargers could only put up 17 points against the Bengals and would have to put up, what do we think the baseline against any Chiefs team? 28?
Well, that's what I was going to say.
If you had any chance of winning, you got to put up 28, right?
That's where I was heading next with it, too, is the Chargers offense, with what they have, do you think they can score 30 points or 28 points? And
I've only seen it 1 week, and my answer then would be no. But, you know, I think if the rushing attack completely dominated, maybe. I've seen the Chiefs defense for one week. It's hard to...
No Derwin James for them on their set. We know the Chiefs offense is going to get theirs no matter what, but especially with no Derwin James. I don't see how they're able to score enough, they being the Chargers, to make this a game where we're talking about the final possession.
Sure.
And the Chargers have a chance to drive down the field and put the pressure on the defense and find out another test for them. I don't see a situation where there's going to be 2.5 minutes to go when Tyrod Taylor's got a chance to lead the Chargers down the field for a game-winning field goal or something. I don't see them even being in a spot to be able to do that. I don't think the Chiefs are winning by like 3 touchdowns or anything. Some people, you're talking like the Chiefs are going to win by 30 in this thing.
Well, they are a significantly better team than the Chargers.
They are, but I think to your point a little bit of whether it's trap or just divisional games and the focus that exists for both teams. In fact, Patrick Mahomes was on The Drive back on Monday, and he joins The Drive each and every Monday at 2:15, and he mentioned, do they prepare differently for divisional opponents?
We talk about it all offseason. I mean, you have to win your division in order to get to your next step to trying to get to the Super Bowl. We understand that our division is a really good one with the Chargers, the Raiders, and the Broncos. And so we're going to go out there and we game plan for them in the offseason. And so when we get to game week, we can go out there and really give our best effort against a really good football team.
Do you think
they usually spend extra time in training camp, but this was a weird training camp.
It is, but do you think also when we talk trap games and all, week two of the seasons, even though, yes, the Ravens are on the rise and this early in the season, isn't it harder to be vulnerable to that? Isn't it easier to be vulnerable to that, man, when it's you're 6-1, you're 6-0, and then the next, you know,
it's the game before
you're a month and a half in, you're in a rhythm, you're rolling, you know what the Chargers are, let's say, you know what that team you're playing week 7 is, you know they're not maybe a very good team. You have the full attention of the Chargers, and I think the Chargers have the full attention of the Chiefs, man. One, Andy Reid doesn't let that happen, and two,
like it's the Raiders game
early.
Before they play the Bucks or something later in the
season. That one, depending on what, we'll know what
the
Raiders are.
But that's off a bye week.
We'll know.
That's even more off days than what you were talking about before. The schedule, the way it lays out against the division for Kansas City, every single road game is with time.
And it sets up, especially the division, almost all the divisional games set up for some extra time in it. It sets up very nicely. And Andy Reid, even if it's not an official bye week, he's 18-3 off of a bye week. We'll continue to talk more Chargers, of course, as we get closer and closer to kickoff. We did get official confirmation. There was all the sources for weeks. Is it going to happen? Is it not? The Big Ten is back. College football for the Big Ten is back after their decision before everybody else to go ahead and shut down the season and try to play in the spring.
And then try to force everyone else to quit with them.
They were hoping other conferences would join up. We know the Big 12 and in other conferences played some non-conference games this past week, and the Big 12 might wish they didn't play this past week and the way things went down, but they will have conference football on the 26th. And now the Big 10 making the announcement October 23rd and 24th. They will start 8 weeks, no buys, December 19th title game. And they have some additional protocols, including daily rapid testing. And that's their reasoning why they say they can play now, Cody. We couldn't play when we were thinking about it in the middle of August, but now we can because we have daily rapid testing. And while I think, there's certainly plenty of truth to that. That's a huge step. We've seen the news articles about rapid testing improvements. A great thing. It's fantastic. But this is just football playing. I'm happy. Don't get me wrong. I'm happy to have Big Ten football back. And we've talked a lot about Kevin Warren and how they weren't transparent and they dug themselves a hole in all this, that Kevin Warren, the commissioner of the Big Ten. But this is just football happening. And we hear, it's not about the money. Okay, right, okay. Because none of the other sports, Cody, are returning. If it really is about the rapid testing, and that's it, it's just the rapid testing, then how come we're not seeing the Olympic sports play as well, Cody?
It's about public pressure. It's not. It has nothing to do. Zero to do with the rapid testing. That's not it. It helps, certainly, but it's about public pressure. They shut down, and the other leagues didn't fall. If the other leagues had not come back, there would have never been college football. The Big Ten wouldn't have changed its mind. They would have just stayed the course, as would have everyone, had they convinced the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12 to come along with them. What happened was they were in the minority, and then the numbers got better and they felt pressure and pressure and pressure and continuous pressure and pressure and pressure to come back, and eventually did so. And now they're in it. Now it's fine. They already, the problem is they did finally come back after like wavering back and forth gold. And now they're at a disadvantage as far as their chance to get somebody in the college football playoff. They're not way off in the Big 12 schedule, so it is not currently impossible. Currently, it's scheduled for 8 weeks with no buys, starting October 23rd and 24th, and they would have a championship game, so they would try to put themselves in a position, 1-2, to get that team a ninth game right so that they can boost their record. But because there's no buys and they've set a threshold of a 5% positivity rate, that means if they miss even one game, what percentage was one missed game for Ohio State, for whoever in the Big Ten, Nebraska can tell themselves that, but whoever in the Big Ten thinks they have a chance to get to the title game. If they miss one game, their chances of getting to the title game drop by what, 5, 6, 10%? I mean, you're talking about a large difference going with this schedule because of how tight the window is.
And I think the reason why they probably feel okay with doing the lack of bye weeks, one, they just don't have the time to do it because of how late they're going to start this thing, which is October 23rd, 24th or so, is with the rapid testing, they probably feel like they have a better grasp of where they're at heading into game weeks, because we've seen in the Big 12 a couple teams like Baylor, for example, and TCU didn't play their non-conference games this past weekend because they ran into issues. They didn't have minimum roster requirements. Heck, K-State's opponent last week, Arkansas State, who beat the Wildcats, their next game this week, I think it's this week, and if not the next, has already been postponed because they had a COVID outbreak. That's the issue that the Big Ten will still potentially have to deal with, but I do think the rapid testing is going to help them. I just think it's just comical when we hear, oh, a ton has changed. I don't think a whole lot has changed, really, Cody, other than what you said, which is that we wondered at the time of the decision for the Big Ten, why did you make it so early? Why not see how things play out? I've preached time. You've got it. Wait a little bit.
That was the only time I said that somebody had time to make a decision.
And here they are in the middle of September, heading towards the end of September, and they've now reversed course. And it's okay to, by the way, be cautious and reverse. That's fine. The issue the Big Ten, the reason why they've been getting crushed, and we certainly have as well, is the way they approached it from the top with Kevin Warren and their commissioner, and how they weren't transparent. And then now it's trying to sell all this in the way that things have changed. And it's good that they're going to have the rapid testing and all that. And it's good for, you saw tweets from student athletes at Big Ten schools over the weekend, down seeing other programs and other conferences play, and they're sitting at home and not playing. So why aren't we able to do it? And I understand that. So no, this is a really good thing. It's just, it reminds us yet again how much of a joke the selling point is that, oh yeah, these student athletes and the money involved in all of it, it brings to light even more of it when we know that if the rapid testing is feasible, they're not paying the money to have it for everybody else. They're doing it just for football because of the moneymaker that football is.
Well, and that's some of the, this is where they release stuff and they think it's good news. And then if you actually read between the lines, you know what these college, we're not stupid college programs. Like the Big Ten released, for instance, that as part of this deal, they were going to start a cardiac registry, essentially tracking people who had issues,
myocarditis,
other heart-related issues stemming from if they had gotten COVID. And you might remember, Ed Orgeron over the weekend, or yesterday, the day before, had said he thought pretty much everyone on his team has had it anyway, so it's no big deal. So when you listen to him say it like that, and then the Big Ten puts out this cardio, it kind of makes it feel like college football players are the test rats in the subject of how it'll affect your heart. Like, look, we'll keep a registry and find out how these people get hurt. You're like, thanks, I guess. That doesn't make me safer, the fact that you're just keeping a list of us who have myocarditis. Yeah. That doesn't exactly assist us in this. You're now again admitting that there are serious health consequences that come from this, other than the people who are like, hey, they might die. The Big Ten, in the end, I think made the right decision to come back, but they always try to hide behind this vaguity that is, no, it was this thing, not the other thing that brought us back. And look, we're tracking health now, so we can justify the actions. And really, nothing's changed in the way they're handling things. Nothing's changed in anything other than they'll get testing back a little bit quicker, which is nice. But that's not the reason they came back, and we all know it.
9 games in 9 weeks with no bye weeks. Going to be really interesting to see how that goes, as you said. And I think also if you look at how the college football playoffs going to view this, the one thing that I do like also about this is there was the talk of them resuming it around Thanksgiving, which made no sense because you would have already been way too late to the game to be able to qualify essentially for the college football playoff. Why are you playing in November? By then, players are going to opt out. This probably also prevents some other players from opting out. I know we saw the Ohio State corner who opted out just 2 days ago. Does he all of a sudden opt in? Is October 23rd, 24th soon enough? Is the 9 games worth it for what is maybe one of the top corners coming out of college this year? Does he now reverse course? Is he able to reverse course? Some of those are going to be interesting to see if guys that opted out, if they change their opinion now that they know the season's going to happen. Or if
they can
still,
play now.
Or if they say, you know what, a month, we still got another, like, that's the thing. They still got another month before they start playing. If all goes well, the Big 12, ACC, SEC, they're going to be 3-4 games into this thing before the Big Ten still even plays a single game.
And more teams who play means more people in the pool competing for your spot in the draft gold. That's what, I mean, and it's a sucky decision for the player. Because a lot of players talk about how hard it is going into their first NFL season because they have to train their body for a series of tests that don't mean anything about playing on an NFL Sunday for the most part, right? You're never asked to do three cone drills. Like, all right, to get around your guy before you run your route, run around these cones and then you can head out. So, like, I know that those are the tests that they've standardized in order to, you know, gauge agility. But it's they have to spend so much time doing that. So it's, do they just dedicate that time even more, or do they go back? It's a difficult position for all college athletes. Big Ten athletes probably feel more pressure to go back now, just based on the fact alone there's going to be more competition for their spot come draft time.
I would just be, if I'm another sport in the Big Ten right now, I'd be knocking on the door saying, you guys have this rapid testing. That's what you told us changed. Why aren't we playing? Tell us honestly to our face, if I'm a volleyball player, let's say.
Why
am I not playing? Go and tell me to my face what we already know, which is I don't bring in money to your university, to your athletic department, and those guys do.
And we're trying to save the cost there for the money we'll get back by doing
college
football.
I get why they're doing
football.
It, but it just brings to light
just
even though.
Say it. Yeah. Like, wow. It's like we just can't, college is so afraid to admit that it's about the money, always surrounding the amateurism goal. It's always that. Because if they admit it's a business that has money and that money buys things, which we all know and accept on a general principle of business. And I love that the business of college football is able to fund all of these other collegiate sports. I love that they have lacrosse or soccer or volleyball or baseball, all these sports that wouldn't exist as well at the collegiate level if football couldn't fund them. Just tell me you can't fund them this year so at least we're understanding, or accept the loss for 1 year so that we could do this.
The big one's going to still be college basketball because we know that NCAA tournament. The NCAA tournament funds like 90% of these Olympic sports that exist out there. But exciting news overall from the Big Ten today, and it seemed like things were heading in this direction the last couple of weeks. And next up, Pac-12. Guess they're supposed to vote. Now, I mean, the Pac-12 has no choice at this point, right? Shouldn't we expect in the next couple of days the Pac-12 is going to do the exact same thing? They can't be the only power. If it was one thing, at least you had Big Ten attached to you. And by the way, the Pac-12 was very fortunate. The Big Ten took all the shots for them, took all the heat. And the Pac-12 was just sitting over in the corner in California, just chilling a little bit. People knew they weren't playing.
And
but
they're
didn't
the second
the
one to return, by the way.
Again,
they'll take way less heat. Won't spend time on Friday talking about how stupid the Pac-12 was. It'll just be like, oh, the Pac-12's back, just like the Big Ten. Yeah. Moving on.
Yeah.
In other news, yeah, that was smart. Pac-12 played well, man.
Weren't the bad guy.
Well, I'm just saying from a perspective, if you were going to cancel, weren't the bad guy the first time, weren't the bad guy the second.
Big Ten football back at the end of October. Coming up next, what did a former NFL running back say about Chiefs rookie running back and the expectations he has for Clyde?
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
Back here on Cody and Gold.
You jumped in too soon.
I know.
Well, that was the hook.
These beds.
This is kind of jumpy.
There was one we had yesterday or Monday, and it was a good minute
before it kicked.
It was going to take a minute if I didn't just jump in. I don't know how long some of these are going to take. They're all.
I like the xylophone on this one.
Uh-huh. I've been trying to delete the really bad ones.
Okay.
Bong, bong.
Well, that's good. That'll help a little bit. We are back here. Good to have Cody back with us here on the show. You guys can, of course, always hit us up on Twitter. In addition to the Smitty's Garage Burn Beer text line, 913-576-7610, at Alex Gold, at Cody B. Tapp, and at Steven Serta. And coming up tomorrow on the show, we'll be joined by Clyde Edwards-Alaire. He will join us exclusively here on 610 Sports Radio, of course, your official Chiefs broadcast partner. And some high praise continues after he finishes week one, the leading rusher in the National Football League. And if you were watching the game on Thursday, and if you were watching Twitter, I should say, while you were watching the game, you saw maybe Maurice Jones-Drew send out a tweet and saying that it reminded of himself when he was watching Clyde Edwards-Alaire run the football. And he joined the drive yesterday and broke down what Clyde can do in a Chiefs offense, and specifically check out the expectations he has. Is he in line with Cody and Serta?
I definitely feel like Clyde can be a 1,400 yard back with, you know, 14 to 15 touchdowns. I mean, in that offense, the sky's the limit because he's not the focal point. He's the guy that, you know, everyone's looking at: Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, you know, all these, Nicole Hartman, all these guys. And then you now have to focus on, try to put your focus on Clyde. And I think more teams are going to rather lose with Chiefs running the ball than Patrick Mahomes throwing it all over the yard. So I think, again, he can be maybe 1,500, depending on, you know, how healthy he stays throughout the season and how teams continue to defend him.
See, his expectations even went up within that 25-second answer. That's how exciting
like, you know,
it is.
I said 13 or 14. That didn't feel like enough. Maybe 15.
And by the way, I believe he was
just talking on rushing. The ground.
So that's what I said. I mean, 1,500, if that's in line
with where we say, 1,400, 400 yards receiving.
Where you guys are at. Now, he's on Serta's 15 touchdown mark or so. Serta, 14 or 15 is what you said, and Maurice Jones-Drew is at 14 or 15.
I said 16 to 18.
So even higher. Hey, look, after week one, you have to feel very, very good about that. No question, man.
Feel better if you got that second touchdown in, though.
Some goal line stops. We'll see if that hopefully doesn't continue overall. But look, no, I think, you know, what he also mentioned about just how teams are going to have to pick. And he says teams are going to say, we're going to make the rookie beat us, not Patrick Mahomes, not Tyreek Hill. But as he went and he kept listing, not Tyreek Hill, not Sammy Watkins, not Travis Kelce. You got all these different guys. So you're going to choose that Clyde's going to be true. That might have been an okay philosophy to at least go into week one with, thinking, all right, let me see the rookie prove it. That's what the Texans essentially did. They played cover two. That backfired, obviously. He led the league in rushing this past week and had the touchdown. Are they going to take that same approach? Are they going to say, we're going to make the rookie beat us? I don't think so, but okay, if that happens, maybe that's when Clyde gets more involved in the passing game. Maybe that's where we start to see more from Mecole Hardman step up.
The only way to do that plan successfully is to have a defensive line who can stop the run with just like the four down defensive linemen and two linebackers, because you're still going to have to do light boxes. Like, you don't have a choice. Like, if you're going to just say, let Clyde beat us, it can't be let Clyde beat us and we'll put eight guys in the box, because that will be a horrible decision and Clyde's not the one who's going to beat you and everyone else is going to beat you instead. That's what we know about this. So if you're going to do that, then you're still kind of stuck in that situation. I don't blame MJD for having those kind of high expectations. He had he had 138 yards and he did that, Gold, without a single receiving yard. He's the NFL's leading rusher, and all we've done is talk about what a good receiving back he was going to be in addition to this offense, which means we haven't even seen the other way Clyde Edwards-Helaire can beat you. I can know you could talk about Mahomes' efficiency in that game. I'm not out here to just tell you Clyde Edwards-Helaire was the biggest reason they beat them on offense, but they were clearly willing to beat them on the ground, unlike any game we have seen from Patrick Mahomes at any point in his career. He was just incredibly efficient and had no issue moving the ball. But I would have those kind of expectations if they're willing to give it to him. I'm not sure I thought he was ever going to get 25 carries on the ground in any game.
No, and I still would be very surprised
if it happened again,
if we see another 25 carry game. But at the same time, as you heard from Andy Reid just 2 days ago, and you'll hear him again coming up at 11:45, if that's what they're going to give you, though, and if it's working and he's the hot hand, you're not going to just pass in that scenario. And I don't think this week, for example, against the Chargers, if we'll see, Vegas will certainly set it. If I set the over-under on carries for Clyde, where would I have to set it for you to take the over on it? If I set it at 19 carries, would you take Clyde getting over 19 and a half carries?
I take the under this week.
I think that number might be too high. Probably should set it at like 16 and a half. Would you take the over there? I think because
there's no tape, you really do have to let a team show you how they want to beat you, so then you can react. The teams who will do well against Kansas City in these first three or four games are the teams who can actually make adjustments, Gold.
This was MJD also on the drive yesterday and talking about just Andy Reid in general. Why do running backs work in his system?
The thing that I love about Andy Reid and Eric Neiman, what they do, they're very creative of getting the running back into space. They're a matchup offense, right? And so they're going to try to find ways to get their tight ends on linebackers, their running backs on linebackers, and allow you to use your versatility to go out there and make plays. And that is not only in the passing game, they do that in the running game as well. They give you opportunities to go one-on-one with safeties and corners, and they let you be you. And so they do a really good job of motions and schemes to get the defense in the position they want them to be in, and they attack. And so you saw that a ton. You know, Clyde did a really good job of making people miss in the hole on that touchdown run. He broke a tackle, shook a guy, and then outran another guy to the end zone. So that's something you saw at LSU, and they saw that. And that's why they drafted him first round, because they knew what he was going to be able to bring to the table.
That run will still be one of the highlights that just gets played over and over and over here in the 2020 season against Justin Reed.
Well, what he's talking about, we talk a lot about that with quarterbacks. Part of what he's talking about, why Reed is so good at running backs, is what makes him a great coach. He is one of the best coaches. Like, every coach has their individual strength. Andy, you know, their best strength. The thing they do that other coaches don't do as well as them, when you're a great coach. The one thing I would say about Andy Reed is he's one of, if not the best coach, at adjusting his talent to his scheme. So he sees what Clyde Edwards-Helaire, just like Patrick Mahomes has talked about for years. Coach, I tell coach what I like doing. I tell coach what I'm comfortable doing. And then coach makes these plays together. Reed puts these plays together that make me feel comfortable, like I know where I'm supposed to be. I tend to think he does that with all positions. We just don't talk about it nearly as much. What Maurice Jones-Drew was talking about is, like, that play is exactly the kind of position they would have put Clyde Edwards-Helaire in at LSU at running back. And Andy Reid's like, that wasn't part of their offense last year. And instead, he's designing plays and a run scheme. Their run scheme is different this year. In one game, mind you, it's different than the run scheme is different this year than it was last year. And it's different this year to make Clyde Edwards-Helaire comfortable. I don't think that that should be missed in all of this.
Yeah, no,
I think that's one of those things Andy does so perfectly.
And Osimile has been a big part of that, too. He's been talked up plenty over the last week, and deservedly
that's part of the scheme
and how they bring him in, and it brings a different, you know, philosophy with what they're going to do in the ground game, at least certainly after 1 week, and something that was really positive as well. We also, you know, saw a bunch of running backs get paid over the weekend before the game even started. And Maurice Jones-Drew was asked by the guys on the drive yesterday what he would say to those that believe you shouldn't pay the running backs. Me, for example.
I try not to use this word, but people that say that are stupid. Like, the game of football is about running the ball. One of the reasons the Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl is because they outrushed the San Francisco 49ers. A team that was the reason they got to the Super Bowl is because they ran the ball well. You don't pay position, you pay players. And if you have talented players on your roster, you compensate them for that, for, you know, as such. So Alvin Kamara, yes, he's a running back by title, but he also impacts the game in the passing game. He also helps your quarterback out, because you're going to see simple coverages because they have to try to stop the run. If the Tennessee Titans didn't pay Derrick Henry, I promise you, I would have made the biggest stink of them all, because Ryan Tannehill, all he did in the playoffs was turn around and hand the ball off to him, right? Like, Derrick Henry is the reason, and that defense was the reason the Titans went to the AFC Championship game. And so when you look at those guys, Joe Mixon, I mean, he played behind an offensive line that wasn't the best last year, still gave you 1,100 yards, has been one of the top young backs in the league for a long time. I don't even have to get to Christian McCaffrey and what he's done. But you're not paying the position. You're paying the player and how he's being utilized and how he helps your offense.
I understand.
So do we only pay receiving backs?
I understand what he's saying, but you know where I'm at, and it's not going to change whatsoever on this. And I said the day after the Chiefs drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he can go off and be one of the top five running backs in football for the next 4 years. You have to still be okay as a fan and as an organization, more importantly, to not get caught up and say, wow, he's been so great for us for 4 years, we've got to pay him the mega deal. I'm okay. Like, the deal that Kareem Hunt got, that's not what I'm talking about. Those deals are fine. It's the deals that we saw over the weekend for the Dalvin Cooks of the world. And those guys are great players, and I'm glad that they got their contracts and taken care of and the financial security. But the point that Maurice Jones-Drew made in there, one of them is actually, to me, why you don't pay if you're the Chiefs specifically. He says, I would have been upset if Derrick Henry wouldn't have got paid, because all they did was Ryan Tannehill hand the ball off to Derrick Henry. Fact. He's correct. Kansas City doesn't need to do that. They're not. As long as you have Patrick Mahomes, which you're going to have that at least by the
you
time.
You don't have to just turn around and hand it to
Clyde.
And
Andy Reid is going to be here. He's on a 6-year contract. Both, by the time you have to make a decision, and it sounds crazy because we're only one game into the Clyde Edwards-Helaire era, but if he continues on the track that people believe he's going to be on, you know, you're not going to do that. Yeah, if you are a team that has Ryan Tannehill as your quarterback, yeah, you probably need to take care of that stud back. You don't need to ever do that. Kareem Hunt, third round pick, as we know. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was a first-round pick. It was a shocker. First time Andy Reid had ever taken a running back in his career in the first round. We know other teams, heck, his example about Damian Williams saying that the Chiefs relied on a running back. Yeah, they might have relied on a running back in the Super Bowl a little bit, not to the extent that he claims.
But you're making a point on a guy that they essentially got for nothing.
He was undrafted. Yeah. So that's the point as well. So I disagree. I still disagree with MJD on that point, but really interesting to hear his expectations. You have a guy that sees himself in a current back, and those are the expectations, 1,500 yards and 15 touchdowns.
Well, I understand why running backs get paid, but I do think that you almost, there is something to like paying the running backs he mentioned aren't just running backs, which means he himself, until he got to Derrick Henry, he eventually mentioned Derrick Henry. But the first couple he mentioned were Alvin Kamara, 81 catches a season 3 years in a row, Christian McCaffrey, we know what he does in the passing game for the Panthers over the last couple of years. Derrick Henry is not much of a receiving back, and we're basing his entire payday on like 1 second. And now this was maybe the greatest eight-run stretch by a running back ever, right? It's top five stretches of a running back ever. But he averaged less than 4 yards a carry for half a season when they were bad, and then they got good at the same time Tannehill did. Like, it's not running backs, great running backs, very rarely ever just carry a team to the playoffs. Great quarterbacks can carry bad teams to the playoffs. Great running backs can't. Adrian Peterson can go out there and rush for 2,000 yards. How far did that team go? He was legitimately great. Unstoppably great. If a quarterback is unstoppably great for any portion of any part of a season, that team wins gold. We've talked a lot about how just efficient Ryan Tannehill was in the second half of that season last year. This is where Jones drew his off. Just doesn't matter.
It's a similar answer that Christian McCaffrey gave us. He joined us all the way back in, what was it, May, April or so. And we asked
for the Tyrann Mathieu radio thought.
Yeah, and we asked him essentially the same question about what do you say to those that say don't pay running backs? What do you,
He
said it was like, it's stupid. He's like, I think
it was
stupid.
It was pretty close to that. He said it was dumb.
I think it's dumb and stupid. Same type of answer. And I understand they're both running backs. And so I don't expect a former or a current running back to say, yeah,
hey,
I don't deserve
to be paid. What do you think about people paying radio hosts?
Yeah, I just wouldn't really do it, man.
They really
just
shouldn't pay him, right? They could just get some kid out of college. You're like, no, that's dumb. No, pay us.
Yeah.
Please.
So, I mean, I'm not surprised, but I disagree with a lot of that within that. But really good stuff from Maurice Jones-Drew. If you missed that full interview from the drive yesterday, it's up on 610sports.com as well. We'll transition a little bit to the Royals, and we'll get into Mike Matheny's comments on Danny Duffy. He joined, Mike Matheny did, as for his weekly visit on Fesco in the Morning earlier today. We know Duffy was supposed to be the scheduled starter last night, did not start. We'll get into that more in just a little bit, but the Royals had their six-game winning streak snapped yesterday. But prior to that, during that six-game stretch and the really 2 weeks or so before that, starting pitching specifically from the guys that we think are key parts to the future, you had a week stretch of Brady Singer potentially with a no-hitter last Thursday into the eighth inning.
He pitches again tonight, by the way.
He does, and Brad Keller against the Tigers. And then Brad Keller on Sunday, complete game shutout. That's two key guys that we think are going to be potentially aces, potentially, of this staff. And then you still have Bubich. You have Hernandez as well. Who's the best out of the group right now? Who is it? And for me, going forward,
like, who's the best career?
Yeah, because right now, right now, who's the best? It's, of course, it's Brad. Right now, it's
right
Brad
now
Keller.
It's Brad Keller.
Obviously.
There's not really
like
a conversation to be had.
Barring something shocking, he's going to probably be your opening day starter next year. I would be
I still think
surprised.
If he had a full season, he would be in legitimate conversation for the Cy Young.
You brought that up a couple weeks ago, and the limitations of innings was tough, but also I think normally in a 162, yeah, you're going to have a better chance at doing it because people won't factor in how your team's performing. We know that from the Zach Greinke days, and it didn't
matter. That far back.
But in a 60-game stretch, it absolutely did matter and definitely hurt you there. No, look, Brad Keller for next season even probably going to be the ace of this staff, but out of the guys that are 25 or younger, who will be the best of the current group? I still think it's Singer, and I've said that from all along, and there's nothing that's going to change during the 60-game stretch. Like, why would I, if I thought Brad Keller wasn't going to have as good of a career as Brady Singer a month ago, there's nothing that would cause me to change that in the least a month.
Sure.
Now, we get into this time next season, maybe there's plenty of more evidence than it says, hey, you can't keep saying that it's not Keller. He continues to just look great. Now, there's a chance that ideally both we're talking about both guys and it's 1A and 1B. That's the perfect scenario here. But I still will go with Singer. And it does. We've talked a lot about the hype that exists for him versus the hype that exists for Keller. And maybe that's still where my mind is at. And my expectation level is just way higher than where I think he can go. Like Brad Keller, he's still very young. I understand that he's going to continue to improve as well.
Yeah, but he's not old either.
No, but I still view the ceiling much higher for Brady Singer.
Here's where you can, again, when I say the Cy Young thing, I don't just say that to say that. It's just the sheer number of starts that done it. For instance, ESPN does their like Cy Young predictor, where they essentially assign grade values based on innings pitched, wins, ERA, strikeouts, and all those. Not surprisingly, they have Shane Bieber as the favorite to win the Cy Young. I think Shane Bieber would have still won the Cy Young in the American League if Brad Keller had three more starts on it. But Shane Bieber's got a 1.53 ERA, 102 strikeouts in 64 innings in which he's allowed 11 runs. Number two on that list is Liam Hendricks. Brad Keller's been as good as him. Number three is Dallas Keuchel. Brad Keller's been as good as him. Number five is Lance Lynn. Brad Keller's been as good as him. Four is a reliever, so it's not even worth mentioning. He is definitively better than anyone pretty much four and under on this list. So he'd be a top five Cy Young candidate. And the reason why I think he's the best going forward, and we'll take your answers. Smitty's Garage Burger Beer text line 913-576-76. Who has the best career out of the four young pitchers who are here now? We'll leave off the other young guys because we've got more Asa Lacy, Daniel Lynch, and et cetera time. Alec Marsh just got promoted to the 60-man going forward. But of this grouping, the answer to me is clearly Brad Keller. And that's not even a knock on the guy who I just watched almost toss a no-hitter. But if you read Alec Lewis's piece from The Athletic, or you've taken a look at some of the things, Brad Keller had pitched really well in his first 2 years in the majors, and now he's made adjustments to how he throws his fastball, and he's even better. It's hard because it's only seven games, and if it were any given seven-game stretch in a regular season, we might tell you to pump the brakes based on that evidence, but we don't have more to go on in a year like this. This is as dominant as he has been at any one stage. I'm pretty sure he's the best starter out of this entire current group that's with them at the moment, and clearly looks like the kind of guy who's going to be around Major League Baseball for a long time. I think Brady Singer is going to be a 10-year starter in this league too, if not more. But Brad Keller, to me, has separated himself as the clear guy who is going to have the best career out of this group for now, because I have enough evidence now from, you know what, 55 career starts and 80 appearances in Major League Baseball to tell me just how dominant he can be.
The switch that we saw from Brad Keller and he, you know, that where he was a year ago and then to now taking up a notch, and we're talking about complete game shutouts, and you're talking about potentially yes. being a top five Cy Young guy if it was a normal season and all that. That's, again, that gets to where I'm at with the ceiling on Brady Singer. We've only seen 48 innings or so from Brady Singer this year. What's to say that we don't to have this?
Then it can't be better because we've seen so much more from him.
Sure. It's a great problem to have. Let's say, who's to say a year from now, we're not talking about Brady Singer. Wow. He's over 150 innings in his career and he's able to,
where Brad Keller is.
And you're like, wow. Oh, and that's off of just that point in time. And then we still know what's to come with somebody. I mean, we haven't even seen Asa Lacy.
I already told you where Asa Lacy should rank amongst the prospects. I mean, and it should be, you have higher expectations for him than Brady Singer. So I get what you're saying about those guys, but I mean, and you're right. Brady Singer is so young, Gold, we don't have all the evidence. But still, I just feel like I have enough evidence now on Keller that's why I have to put his ceiling higher at this stage.
Yeah, for this, Shane Bieber is going to easily win it this year.
Yes.
In general. Like, I mean, as far as what he's been able to do for the Cleveland Indians.
Trash of the day.
All right, let's get to the trash of the day. We got some audio. This is out in Utah, and you can say this is actually terrifying, or you can also take the humorous angle. Let me just play this for you and get your reaction to this.
Now, hundreds have gathered here in front of the Washington County Administration Building calling for the end of a mask mandate, saying they are tired of not living their normal lives.
No more masks! No more masks!
Not on the backs of my kids, or you're going to get more federal funding. That's how I feel about that.
A passionate call for action Friday morning in St. George. Several police officers on standby as many locals called concerns about coronavirus spikes
overblown.
The flu kills more than coronavirus.
Others calling the virus a hoax or stating that asymptomatic carriers simply do not exist and they cannot be forced to wear masks anywhere as citizens of the United States.
If we want to wear a mask, that's fine. We can take care of ourselves.
Some rally attendees say they shouldn't ever wear masks if they have any medical issues or mental health concerns or if they feel they simply can't breathe.
When George Floyd was saying, I can't breathe, and then he died, and now we're wearing a mask, and we say, I can't breathe, but we're being forced to wear it anyway.
But many stated that they believe in all cases, masks jeopardize kids' health. Parents are demanding they have the right to decide what to do with their children.
I'll tell you another reason I'd hate masks. Most child molesters love them.
School administrators responding that they don't understand why crowds are protesting them based on a mandate given by the governor.
They blocked off the front entrance to the school building, and we went out to ask them to move, and they attempted to storm the school building.
The school board is implementing the governor's recent order that face shields alone are not enough. And if a parent is adamant that their child cannot wear a mask or a shield, they must fill out a form, including a doctor's note, so the district can review it. In St. George, Katie Kralis, ABC 4 News.
St. George, Utah.
There's a lot to unpack there.
There is. The one that really gets me is the older lady toward the end, the final 30 seconds or so, and she says, you know who likes to wear a mask? Child molesters. Because they like the mask. That's why I'm not wearing a mask, because child molesters like masks.
What?
This was a real story. These are real people, Cody. This is not an SNL skit.
Did she explain why?
What on earth?
Look, man, if there's one thing I've learned in all of this is that people are going to have some really varied mask opinions.
Uh-huh.
But it just feels like...
That was all-time stuff.
The things I don't understand is, like, it just seems like the smallest inconvenience, doesn't it?
It's also clinically proven that it does not hinder your ability to breathe.
What are you talking about, science here, Serta?
I'm stunned that...
You're dropping science here?
I'm stunned at that. That's an actual news station, television station out in Utah. I'm shocked those are the people they ran with. That's all they had.
Yeah,
I guess.
If they go to a demonstration about anti,
like, were those the
sentiment?
Worst? Like, were those the worst, or was there quote unquote normal? Or was there like, well, these are so ridiculous, we've got to put them in the news story.
I mean, you know,
or were those the type of answers they were getting?
If you got an idea how local news works, the most ridiculous answer tends to be the one on top. I try not to let, in any situation, the loudest voices be the ones most heard for both pro or con arguments, but yikes. That whole clip is just one cringeworthy freak show.
You really would have thought, though, if I didn't tell you, you would have said, oh, that must have been on SNL or something over the weekend. That's...
They did find, like, 10 different characters that were all different, all kid. Saying...
Then you have the first audio cut an 8-year-old? What do you look like? Yeah, 8 years old and something like that? And it's clearly just repeating what... Clearly just repeating what his parents said.
Nature versus nurture, Gold. Nature versus nurture.
There you go. All right, coming up next, we head into the 11 o'clock hour, and do the Chiefs have an answer for this guy come Sunday?
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.